This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. There I am in my own ear. Tom Hartman here with you. It is such a horrible day. Yesterday, all these calls about, oh, the guy's mentally ill, all this stuff on Fox. Racism is not a mental illness. I'm going to pick this thread up. I've got a lot to say about it in a few minutes. But the other big thing that happened was the 28 Democrats, in my opinion, betrayed the country by voting for Fast Track. And it's gone to the Senate. Apparently that vote's going to be on Tuesday. Congressman Alan Grayson is with us, brilliantly representing the 9th District of Florida. His website, grayson.house.gov and tradetreachery.com. Congressman Grayson, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
So your thoughts on what happened in the House of Representatives yesterday?
It's a disaster for the country. It's interesting that we are like the proverbial frog in the pot. When we're cooked slowly over the course of 20 years, we don't have enough sense to jump out of the pot. And that's what's happened with our economy. We've been bleeding now for 20 years since NAFTA. The cumulative trade debt is now $11 trillion, $35,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. We put it up to a vote, and the party that purports to represent the people, the ordinary people, and what's good for the greatest number, that party ends up splitting with 28 Democrats voting to perpetuate a system that's leading us toward oligarchy government of the rich, by the rich, and for the rich, with the rest of us simply providing cheap labor.
Am I over the top to suggest that this is or is close to something like the corporate takeover, the last gasp of democracy, not just for the United States, but for a number of other countries as well?
Well, let's look at the actual facts of the situation. We have a deep problem in this country. We are consistently buying far more from foreigners than foreigners are buying from the United States. And what they're doing is when we pay for those things that we're buying from them, they're deliberately gaming the system so that rather than buying our goods and services and putting Americans to work, instead they're buying our assets and driving us deeper and deeper into debt. One would think that any political system worthy of the name democracy would take a stab at dealing with that problem when it's reached the point where we're spending $1 billion a day and going deeper and deeper into debt to that extent every single day. But in fact, what's happened is because trade always benefits multinational corporations by definition, exactly who is it who does that trade? It's always a multinational corporation. Because trade benefits multinational corporations by definition and sends us closer and closer to that magical moment when we're all nothing but serfs, because of that, the political system is unable to deal with these facts, these basic facts, and instead greases the skids toward new fake trade deals that would actually make the situation worse for everybody except those multinational corporations.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question, Tom, is yes. Yes. When you look at the actual facts, when you see what's happening in Washington, D.C., you have to reach the conclusion that multinational corporations are literally calling every shot.
Which, and this is like the study that came out of Princeton a while back, that suggested that the probability of legislation passing at the federal level in the United States that was promoted by or that appealed to that was wanted, shall we say? There was a word that that I'm forgetting. Pinckney, I think, was the guy who put the thing together. That was wanted by the as I recall, it was the top maybe 5%, top 1% in any case. Was fairly high. It was like 30-40%, whereas the probability of legislation passing that the average American, the average working citizen wanted, was equivalent to noise in terms of math. You know, it was random. There was no association. What does that tell us about our country?
Well, let's, again, be as specific as possible. Look at what happened here. A mechanism is established that benefits only multinational corporations, and it draws the support of 28 Democrats in the House, 14 Democrats in the Senate. Let's compare that, for instance, to a subject like paid sick leave. Well over 70% of the American population believes that every employee should have paid sick leave as a matter of right, just like we have a minimum wage, just like we have worker safety laws, just like we supposedly have time and a half for overtime, as a matter of legality and right. Every other major country in the entire world guarantees paid sick leave. We don't have a law like that in the United States, even though 70% of the public wants it and supports it. In fact, I took the trouble to put it on the ballot here in Orange County last year. I arranged for that to happen here in my county in Central Florida. It won with 62% in the vote in a place that's actually rather conservative. 62% of the public wanted it. By the way, the next thing that happened is that the Republicans passed along the state legislature appealing it over the heads of the people of Orange County. So what does it tell us? A political system where multinational corporations want a special benefit, a special preference. Courts set aside just for them. Only foreign corporations will be able to sue before the World Bank under these agreements. Whatever it is they want, they get. When people want something that protects the most vulnerable above us, among us, and makes life worth living, an element of being part of the middle class, paid sick leave, that's something that never even becomes part of political discourse.
Right. This vote now is going to have to be redone in the United States Senate. We had 13 Democratic senators who, in my opinion, betrayed us last time. What do you know, or what are your thoughts on how this is going to play out? I understand Mitch McConnell is scheduling a vote for Tuesday.
Well, we have Maria Cantwell, who McConnell cheated right to her face.
How so?
What happened was McConnell told Cantwell that if she supported him on Fast Track, then he would support her on the Export-Import Bank, that corporate welfare program that Cantwell wants to extend because she's a senator from Washington, and one of the beneficiaries of that program, a very large beneficiary of that program, is Boeing, which is headquartered in her state.
Right.
So Cantwell traded her vote on Fast Track for a vote and support on the Export-Import Bank. McConnell cheated her. What he did was he put up a fake vote on it that had no consequence of any sort, didn't even get Export-Import Bank out of the Senate, much less through the House and then signed by the president, lied to her to her face to get her vote, and now she recognizes that and she's upset about it. So it's quite possible that Maria Cantwell is now back on the side of light rather than darkness, and she will oppose Fast Track, not necessarily for the best reasons, but the fact is that she now is telling people that she didn't get what she wanted, she didn't get what she deserved, what she bargained for, so she may return to the anti side, which is where all the Democrats ought to be.
Yeah.
Apart from her, and we only need two others, we have Michael Bennett from Colorado, we have Carper from Delaware, Coons from Delaware, Cardin from Maryland, Heitkamp from North Dakota, Shaheen from New Hampshire, and Warner from Virginia. With regard to Warner, I don't know how anybody can seriously think of himself as a potential presidential candidate, as Warner appears to do, if he's going to throw in with the Republicans and the multinational corporations on something like this.
Yeah.
In any event, those are potential votes among the Democrats, less likely possibilities among Democrats who supported Fast Track on the initial vote are Feinstein, Nelson, McCaskill, Kane, Murray, and White.
Yeah.
Those are considered to be less likely to switch. But if the Democrats pick up a total of three,
so it's time to call our senators. It's time to call our senators. Congressman Alan Grayson, thank you so much for being with us today, sir.
Pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
TradeTreachery.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, Congressman Grayson's website is grayson.house.gov and TradeTreachery.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Jeff in Statesville, North Carolina. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Big big listener here. I think you do an amazing job. Just want to run by my reasons why I think all these populist Democrats would be so for the TPP. You know, because I think they're all getting assurances that the TPP is only going to be used aggressively against China and Russia as far as, like, as economic isolation.
I don't think so.
As far as, like, as a prelude to World War III, or as, like, because, you know, we've already know that Obama is an arm twister. And so I think that that's what the TPP is, for arm twisting.
I don't think that there's a military piece to this. But here's the problem, Jeff. If we're just talking about the TPP, none of us know what we're talking about because we haven't read it. There's three leaked chapters, and they look pretty bad. I mean, it's clearly a corporate takeover of
sure.
our democratic processes, but we don't know what the rest of it says, number one. And number two, there are two other trade deals, one with European countries and one basically with the whole world on intellectual properties, and it's called Trade and Services Agreement, and that are equally bad, and in fact, the Trade and Services Agreement looks far worse than any of them, and will pave the way for the privatization of the Internet, it appears. And all of those are going to probably easily pass a Republican-controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate if Fast Track passes, which will tie the hands of Democrats in the Senate in as much as they will not be allowed to filibuster a bill, and will tie the hands of Democrats and in the Senate and the House in that no amendments and essentially no debate, I mean, 83 seconds of debate per member, will be allowed. So really the horror, the anti-democratic freak show that's going on right now, in my opinion, is this Fast Track or Trade Promotion Authority legislation, and that's what's going to be voted on Tuesday in the Senate. So, you know, now is the time to be calling your senators at 202-225-3121, and particularly those who Congressman Grayson just mentioned, and say, please, you know, stop the TPA, the Fast Track. This is Fast Track is worse than the TPP because it sets the stage for 6 years of basically any kind of trade deals the corporations want, as long as the Republicans control both the House and the Senate. And the Republican Party is entirely corporate controlled. It'll just steamroll along. And this
yeah,
is
yeah. I mean, I'm a big Lori Wallach fan. You should have Lori Wallach on again. You know, she's great on the TV.
She's
but you know, if you look at the country like Vietnam has been slowly coming back militarily to Russia. Vietnam is tied almost to Russia now. Russia has been refueling their long range strategic bombers in Vietnam. The TPP and these other trade deals are all about isolating Russia and China economically and twisting the arms of the countries that are in these trade treaties to be more forcefully against China and Russia. And just,
but see, we're already trading with Vietnam. I mean, like crazy.
But I know that, but the TPP is about arm twisting Vietnam to come away from Russian military.
Well, that's Jeff. That's a theory. None of us know that because we haven't read the TPP. And again, this, you know, my concern. Thank you, Jeff, for the call. My concern is not the TPP. The TPP is bad, but this Trade Promotion Authority or Fast Track, this is a fundamental evil against democracy. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Last night on our television program, I had as a guest Dr. Marcia Coleman Adebayo, and we had a rather interesting conversation about the history of America. And she said some things that I thought everybody needs to hear. Here's the first. This is we were talking about race, and she was talking about economics, and I pointed out that from the founding of the Republic until the Civil War, the majority of the, quote, wealth in the United States was slaves, and it was. There was no other single source of wealth that was greater than that, and they were, of course, all held in the South. And the South was willing to fight the Civil War over that. And here's how she responded to that. This is clip one.
The earliest capitalism in America was the slave trade, and the largest block of single industry, as it were, assets that were held in the United States from the mid 1600s until the 1860 were slaves.
Well, and I'd rather call them human beings. But if you want to use the word slave, that's fine. You know, I look at what you call the slave trade. Really as a human and sex trafficking trade.
Yes.
That's really what it was. And when you look at the history of the word slave, it's actually not used for almost 40 years after Africans arrived in Jamestown. There's a correlation between Africans coming into the United States and when there is a great deal of profit to be made from rice and from cotton, that you see them, the name that's assigned to these Africans being changed from black Moors and Africans to slaves. And that was a way of stripping off their identity, stripping off where they came from, stripping off any human link that one would have to another human being.
And then we were talking, well, we continued the conversation. Here's another clip. This is, again, Dr. Marcia Coleman, Adebayo.
I believe that probably 80 or 90% of white Americans could not explain to you what white privilege is. And is that why we're not acknowledging that America has been an apartheid state up until, you know, just a generation ago, and that we've been basically a terrorist state against our own people?
If you don't mind, if I can go back one second for you, because there's an institution that you've missed that's so important to this conversation, and it was called the Slave Patrol. And the Slave Patrol is created about 80 years after the first African arrives in Jamestown. And the goal of the Slave Patrol was, first of all, to surveil, to find out who's moving around from one concentration camp. I know we call them plantations, but they were really concentration camps. Who's moving around from one concentration camp to another? Who's talking about moving from one place, escaping from one to another? And then it was obviously capturing people, because that was a loss to the corporation if that person was able to flee from the corporation. And then it's also providing a level of terror, so that as a deterrent, so that people didn't ever think about moving or trying to escape to freedom.
You know, we don't teach and we don't talk in the United States, and by we, I'm talking largely about the white-owned media, the white-written textbooks, the white power structure in this country. I'm guessing most African Americans understand everything that Marcia was saying, but we don't talk about the South in those terms. That it was a terrorist state. That it wasn't an apartheid state. It wasn't blacks and whites being separated. That happened arguably after the Civil War. In fact, actually, I'd say that arguably happened after 1954. Prior to that, it was still a terrorist state with the Jim Crow laws. People couldn't register to vote, and people could be easily murdered. And to this day, people of color are easily murdered, particularly by authority figures, by police officers in this country, with no consequences. We have to acknowledge that the Confederate flag, which is flying at full staff in South Carolina, while the American flag has been reduced to half staff, that the Confederate flag is the flag of a nation, the Confederate States of America, that was not that different in many ways from Nazi Germany. In as much as they were imprisoning and killing their own human beings, their own citizens, in these concentration camps that we like to refer to as plantations, and that there was the equivalent of the black shirts and the brown shirts, the slave patrols, which led directly to our modern police departments and also to the creation of the Second Amendment. And I think it's time for America for white America to realize and acknowledge that we, white people, have been committing terror against black people since the founding of this republic to this day, and that this horrible killing the day before yesterday down in South Carolina, is just one more piece of that. This kid is a terrorist. The Confederate States of America were a terror state. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And the conservatives want to dance all over this, and weirdly, a lot of that goes back to Reagan. We'll cover that when we get back, and then pick up your phone calls. It's Anything Goes Friday. You a couple more things to share with you, but first, Jim in Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, Jim, you are at a Bernie rally?
Yeah, hey, Tom, this is your roaming reporter in Las Vegas. Bernie's on the stage now. It's quite a turnout here. They had to change it from UNLV to the Great Big Convention Center at Treasure Island.
Wow.
And it's just about jam-packed.
So how many people would you guess have shown up?
Well, they had it set for a little more than 2,000, the guy told me, so it's probably about 1,800.
Holy cow.
A lot of kids, a lot of families.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, and Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and all these other guys, when they do something, when they show up, you know, they get maybe 30 people, 50 people, 100 people. I mean, that's incredible. 1,800 people in Las Vegas?
At 10 o'clock on a weekday, he's got quite... Usually he'd be on your radio right now. I'd be listening to him here.
That's right. That's right.
No, he's here.
Yeah.
All right, just wanted to let you know. Great turnout.
That's incredible. Well, Jim, thank you very much for the call. And if you see Bernie, tell him we played a little bit of his speech on the air today, because we could hear it in the background. And tell him we said hi.
Okay, great.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate it. Chris in Ayer, Massachusetts. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today? Anything Goes Friday.
Hey, Tom, I kind of wanted to tie the TPA and the discussion of why we won't use the word terrorism or even why it's discussed regarding this attack in South Carolina together.
Right.
They both tie back to corporate power, obviously.
Yep.
I think the TPA has been covered. Why, right? I gave a call to Debbie Wasserman Schultz's office yesterday and let her know that as a registered Democrat and a small business owner, I will be doing everything I can to make sure that she and the other Democrats that voted for the TPA fast track yesterday don't serve another day beyond their current term in office, because what they've done is usurp our Constitution. They've undermined the very foundations of a democracy. They've allowed us to move even closer to a fascist state, undermined food safety, environmental laws. To me, it borders on criminal, and I think you've covered it well. But the reason we even have this discussion about whether or not this guy down in South Carolina is a terrorist is because of this. The war on terror is a great tool to allow us to continue to our imperialism around the world.
Right.
We label a Muslim country a terrorist harbor. We send in infrastructure and development, Blackwater or its new name, and Halliburton and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin all make billions of dollars to make sure that that war takes place. And as a result, puppet governments are installed, and those mineral rights, water rights, trade rights all end up in the hands of the multinational corporations. The reason that we don't want to address domestic terrorism, which is what these patriot groups are, is because there's no money in it, right? If we decided that we were going to start to address it, it would distract us from a larger cause. We would have terrorism acknowledged in our backyard. Right.
If anything, it even goes beyond that, Chris. It's not just that there's no money in it. There's actually a profit to be made from it. And that is the longer that the powers that be, and you know, you can put Fox so-called news at the very front of this list, the longer the powers can keep us fighting against each other, turning white against black and black against Hispanic and Hispanic, you know, the whole thing. The longer they can keep us fighting against each other, the longer they can keep us thinking that our inner cities are falling apart because of gangs and criminals and horrible people, rather than because our trade policies have shipped our jobs overseas and people are desperate and broke. The longer they can keep us doing that, the longer they can continue to steal from us. Back to you.
Agreed. I mean, racism is a tool. One of my favorite books is by Audrey Smedley on race and racism in North America.
Yeah.
And it specifically points out to how race and black slavery was an institution that was decided to divide white and poor white people, actually at the time enslaved Irish people and enslaved black people after a rebellion, right?
Okay.
So, you know, I agree with you. But my point is the reason there's even a discussion is because if these people were labeled terrorists, there would be action that was demanded to be taken. We invaded a nation and more than a million people died. Because we were told that Iraq was a terrorist funding and terrorist harbor, right?
Right.
Nation. So we
even though it was a lie.
Right. But my point is, when you say that something's a terrorist or someone is a terrorist, at that point the American psyche demands intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you acknowledge that this person is a terrorist, doesn't that inherently make all white supremacy groups as equally terrorist as a far right Muslim group?
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
And then you would expect action to take place. And we're not politically able. We have the political will to rout out the terrorists we have. And Halliburton and all those companies don't want to build infrastructure here to support it. They make money on the rights of those minerals and those trades overseas.
Right.
So that's the only reason I think that my point was that there's even a debate about why this young man is called a terrorist or not. And it's because if there is a terrorist label, then action would be required. So we have to call him a one-off. He's an outsider. He's a fringe element.
He's mentally ill.
Right. And then we can walk away from any commitment to start addressing the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center said that the number of patriot groups after the election of Obama went from under 300 to just under 1,200,
right,
you know, in a very short period of time.
Right.
So that was how I wanted to tie this issue of domestic terrorism to, you know, corporate authority.
Chris, you did so brilliantly. Thank you.
Thanks
for the call. Brendan in Shawnee, Kansas. Hey, Brendan, you wanted to talk about the state of Kansas?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, not just, I mean, the state of the state of Kansas. Excuse me.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to go ahead and confess, I'm a student. I'm preparing to go into my final year of high school. And
great.
I've seen the, what?
I said that's great. That's great.
Yeah. And this is where we've seen the biggest impact of, let's just call it what it is, austerity. It's really austerity policies that they're pushing on us here in Kansas. And now I live in Johnson County, which is a very wealthy part of the state. And so we've always had good schools. And now with the sales tax that the governor is forcing on us, we are going to be hit hardest by it. And I come from an upper middle class background, so it's going to hurt us, but not like as badly as it can. But here's the catch. There is a very rapidly growing impoverished community in Johnson County, in JOCO, as we call it, and these people are just going to be slaughtered by this sales tax that is all being pushed on us because of this failed experiment that they are trying to push on us. And with our schools, where a lot of these lower-income and impoverished people are really relying on, because we have wonderful schools, the Shawnee Mission School District that I am in particular has been well-known for this. We have lost a lot of our special assets because of these cuts. Personally, because I have some problems, ADHD, et cetera, I have lost a lot of the special assets, social workers and counselors who really helped me, but they were forced to either retire early or they were fired, in essence, because of these cuts, which is just appalling. And I think that Kansas should be a warning for what will happen if someone like Sam Brownback goes even farther with these policies, and he may run for president someday, which I'm very frightened of.
Well, as far as I know, Brendan, every single Republican who is running on a Reaganomics economic platform, which is basically what Sam Brownback has inflicted on your state. It's just good old-fashioned Reaganomics. Cut taxes on the rich, raise taxes on the poor, screw the middle class, and tell everybody, you know, that it's raining when actually you're creating a state full of peons.
It really is. And I am frightened for my future. Personally, once I get out of high school, I'm frightened for how it's going to be, because the chance we have tried and tried to get this to change in midterms and in gubernatorial elections, we have not been successful. And I am frightened that his successor will be possibly even worse. It could be Kobach, which would be disastrous.
Right.
So
Chris Kobach is your Secretary of State, who has compiled this massive database of Democratic voters that they're knocking off the voting rolls in 30-some-odd states, Republican-controlled states. And people won't even know that they've been removed from the voting rolls until after they've tried to vote. You're right. On the other hand, Brendan, the good news is America's waking up. I think that we are, in fact, I think we're rapidly waking up. The fact that Bernie Sanders just pulled 1,800 people in Las Vegas. I know, you know, I was not surprised when he pulled 4,000 people in Minneapolis, because we've been on KTNF for, the Minneapolis Progressive talk station for, 10 years. But we don't have a radio station in Las Vegas. You know, it's like this has grown way beyond people who listen to Brunch with Bernie. His campaign has just, it's taking off. And that's not to say that Bernie is anybody's salvation. It's, I don't believe in the great man theory of history. What Bernie's success is reflecting is that the average American is waking up, and particularly within the Democratic Party. But I'm guessing that there's a lot of people who are showing up at Bernie rallies who in the past have voted as Republicans or have called themselves independents. And so rather than being frightened for your future, take that emotion and convert it into action. And there's so many groups that you can join and participate with, from MoveToAmend.org to Progressive Democrats, PDAmerica.org to MoveOn.org. I mean, there's a bunch of them out there. And
Progressive America is one that I've just joined recently. And we statewide now, we're trying to organize all these groups that are active here. We're trying to organize protests. We're going to be in the streets. They're just going to state capitals.
That's great. Brendan, I wish you the very best, and good on you. God bless you. It's wonderful to hear from a young person who's getting out there and getting active. You are the future, sir. Thank you very much, Brendan. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, the Confederate flag is the flag of a terrorist state. Why is it flying anywhere in America? And welcome back. Diana, in Agora Hills, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. It's a great show you're having today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm just calling to say that I am totally find objectionable this trafficking in the term lone wolf, because it's a way that the mainstream media protects white privilege and the status quo.
Yeah, it ignores all of the institutions that bring about this kind of behavior. And by the way, racism is not a mental illness. It is taught. It is learned.
Yeah, that characterizing of the single gunman. You notice we don't use that term anymore?
Yeah.
When I was growing up, the news would report on a single gunman or a lone gunman or a shooter, but we don't hear that language being used. We hear this lone wolf characterization as a way of identifying a kind of rare outlier. But human beings do not exist in a cultural vacuum, and if we were to use the accurate terminology of single gunman, we would be forced to nationally confront white privilege and social justice issues, don't you think, Tom?
I absolutely do. Or, a white Christian terrorist, because that's what this guy is. He's a white Christian terrorist. He has said he wanted to provoke a race war. That, he murdered people because they were black, and then he said, tell other black people, that he's doing this because you're raping our women and taking over our country. Oh, my God, we got a black president, so we got to go out and kill black people. I mean,
we've got to prevent people from believing that certain types of human beings exist in a cultural vacuum. Nobody exists in a cultural vacuum. And so, that's at the core of a lot of all of this linguistic trickery.
Yeah. I'm completely
thank
with you.
Thank you, Tom.
Diana, thank you very much for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Alan, watching Free Speech TV in Glendale, California. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Well, hi, Tom. Earlier in the week, you talked about people in Washington being in the bubble, including President Obama.
Yeah.
And his trade representative maybe was working on the TPA or TPP.
Yeah, Michael Froman.
However, it seems to me that people in Washington in general, maybe, not everyone obviously, is they're not like effectively in tune with their environment. I think Bernie Sanders is. He goes out. He talks with people in Vermont. He gets along with Republicans. He gets along with Democrats. They respect him because they know him.
Right.
It seems to me that we need some leaders, and it may have to happen at the local level, where people are in touch with that. I mean, if you are kind of in tune with the environment, I live here in Los Angeles, it's hot, you can kind of sense that people, I saw a homeless man who passed out yesterday in the heat in Los Angeles. You can sense that this is going on in the environment. Now, I'm not hoping for an idealistic society, but there's a lot of suffering in the world, and as you know, we have a human consciousness. We have people that understand how economics works. So we can make this country a heck of a lot better place if we use our energy and our talent and our consciousness to improve the lives, really, for the majority of people.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you, Alan. Absolutely with you. And I think increasingly all of America is. America is getting tired of the right-wing crap, for lack of a better word. And they're waking up. We'll be right back. Ten minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations would really rather you didn't know all about, which is why none of them, to the best of my knowledge, yesterday reported, at least in any consequential way. And as far as I could tell, none of them reported at all, although I didn't watch, you know, cable news 24/7 yesterday. The fact that that 28 Democrats sold us down the river on this unconstitutional fast track, or that on Tuesday Mitch McConnell is going to set up a vote. Now the murder in South Carolina, this act of terrorism, certainly a huge story. But can't we chew gum and walk at the same time? You know, can't we break away from a story for even 30 seconds and say, oh, by the way, this vote just happened in the House of Representatives? I mean, there is a lot of consequence. Oh, and by the way, the Pope just came out and said that the entire Republican Party are a bunch of liars. I mean, there's some really consequential stuff going on, and we need to be paying attention to all of it. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up two issues. First of all, the Confederate flag. That was a symbol of a group of people who wanted to break the Union. They wanted to dissolve the Union and form their own country.
Right, they were traitors and they were terrorists.
Exactly, and it's the one thing that we're really not permitted to do. And yet, we send tax money down there to support, all of these different state buildings and whatnot. They get money from the federal government. And I think this should stop. I think there needs to be a law, proposed to just have it completely removed from every public building. And that's that.
Yeah.
And then also I wanted to say, as far as Bernie Sanders, unfortunately, I did hear somebody who is rather partisan and I think wants Hillary Clinton, it was on Free Speech TV, refer to Hillary Clinton as the spoils of riches and Bernie as just the spoils. And
those are both awful characterizations.
Beg your pardon?
Those are both awful characterizations.
Well, they are. And, I think that it's not about, to them, apparently, I guess, it's about winning. And I think, unlike Morris, who doesn't really think that this is the beginning of a movement, I kind of think that it is a beginning of a movement.
Yeah.
So even if Bernie, doesn't win, I think it's woken up a lot of people through Progressive Democrats of America and through just our, activism. Even my own small part, helping people here to try to get Bernie elected. But it's more than just that. I mean, I think that it's, we want to, reinvigorate the Democratic Party. We want to get money out of politics. We want our government returned to the people, so that it is our government and not the government of the wealthy and the elites and this is a very difficult thing to do considering how much money they're putting in on the other side. But I can tell you, we're all in the heartland here, and I know a few people from Wisconsin. It's like they will not rest until Wisconsin is back in as a Democratic state and a progressive state, as it has been for over 100 years.
Well, if it weren't for hundreds of millions of dollars coming from outside the state, Scott Walker would not be governor, and
right.
and in fact might even be in jail right now.
Right.
And he stacked the Supreme Court now with his cronies. So even when his crimes become evident, they will probably not be prosecuted.
Anyway, you know, I appreciate free speech TV and I appreciate independent media. But you had mentioned something about solidarity. And I feel, this is my own opinion, that I want to have solidarity with those members of the Democratic Party that take exception to the Democratic machine politics,
yeah.
and that want to reinvigorate, have something in the same sense as Franklin Delano Roosevelt, also to deal with these issues of white privilege. There's a lot of problems with race in this country, apparently. And in some ways,
apparently.
I mean, it's sad that these things happen, but in other ways, it's good that it does happen because it brings it to light and it, makes us question. I suggest people read Vine Deloria to get a grasp on white privilege, well, it would be the genocide of Indians, and the conflict between Indian culture and white culture. And right now, up in Canada, they're having a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that has to do with the Catholic Church and the Episcopal Church running Indian schools. And there is literally in Canada, there are 1,000. American Indian women that are unaccounted for.
Meaning they've been murdered?
Meaning they don't know what happened to them.
What might have happened to them?
Well, they may have been murdered, they're kidnapped.
Sold off into slavery or something? I mean, it's a
who knows?
Sex trade?
I mean, it's just a terrible story that I learned from Democracy Now! But there are just a lot of issues that we need to deal with as a civilization, which we are, we're part of Western civilization, and we need to come to terms with.
And because none of these issues, or the vast majority of these issues, dealing with them will not allow somebody to make a buck. In fact, it might diminish the profits of some large corporations. You will not hear these issues being discussed in corporate media in the United States.
It's too bad because democracy is a process that we hope we reach at some point, where everybody is included. This isn't something that is only for white males. It isn't something just for Europeans that came to this country. This is for everyone.
Yeah. Well, we've got to make it that way. We've got to make it that way. John, thank you for the call. We're coming up on the top of the hour. We'll be back. I got to tell you about Reagan's role in all this after the break, and we'll pick up your phone calls. It's Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, Octafish over at Democratic Underground cross-posted from an article by Alec Dubrow over at TomPaine.com. At the top, there's a photo. The Octafish's question, want to know who made racism acceptable again in the good old USA? And there's a 1966 actual unretouched photo that appeared in Look magazine of Ronald Reagan smiling and walking in his white slacks and coat. And short sleeve shirt at his home with one of those lawn ornaments or whatever. There used to be a word for them of a black man, you know, with the, you know, holding the little circle that you would tie your horse up to, right? I don't know the name for these things, but anyhow, you can see it. Jim is showing it on the screen right now for those of you who are watching on television. And here's what Alec DeBro writes over at TomPaine.com. Domestically, Reagan opposed every legislative remedy for African Americans, betraying a meanness of spirit and an open racism. As Sidney Blumenthal wrote in The Guardian in 2003, Reagan opposed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He opposed the Voting Rights Act of 1965. He said it was humiliating to the South, which is why he opposed it. And he ran for governor of California in 1966 by promising to wipe the Fair Housing Act off the books. Here's a verbatim quote from Ronald Reagan about the Fair Housing Act. Quote, if an individual wants to discriminate against Negroes or others in selling or renting his house, he has the right to do so. End of quote. Ronald Reagan. After the Republican convention in 1980, Reagan traveled to the county fair in Neshoba, Mississippi. It's near Philadelphia, Mississippi, where in 1964, three Freedom Riders had been slain by the Ku Klux Klan. Before an all-white crowd of tens of thousands, Reagan declared, I believe in states' rights. Reagan was making a grab for the white racist vote, and it worked. Southern Democrats abandoned their party and Moss for one more welcoming of white supremacy. And he was the best friend that South Africa's apartheid government had in the entire developed world. When president, he allowed his staff to refer to Martin Luther King, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. I mean, literally, his staff members were using this phrase, Martin Lucifer Kuhn. This is how bad it was inside the Reagan White House. And then, let's see, Octafish adds the question, anyone wonder what he meant when he conflated food stamps, vodka, Cadillacs, and welfare queens? This is the kind of stuff that leads right to this terrorist murder day before yesterday. It leads right to it. Anyhow, it being Anything Goes Friday, I'm going to get back to your calls. I've got there's an amazing story in Science, the Journal of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I just got my copy today. An amazing story about democracy among baboons. And I think I will hold that until an hour from now and open the third hour with that story because I want to get to the phone calls here. And John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for all you do. Just a great show.
Thank you.
Hate begets hate. It just keeps on going and going and going.
Yep. It's just like you can't generally bring peace by war.
It's so hard to fathom how people think you can. What I wanted to call about the Anti-Ghost Friday, I've noticed that some of the so-called progressive media pundits are worried about being taxed, I think, a little bit more if Senator Sanders becomes president. They are very reluctant to mention his name or to give him any credit on anything. They just want to minimize him.
Yeah, well, this is what I was talking about a few days ago when I talked about when I first came to D.C. and a bunch of insiders threw parties for me and invited me to cocktail parties and things like that. And then figured out that I really didn't want to be an insider. I'm an outsider.
That's great.
And it's been 4 years since anybody invited me to anything other than Ellen Ratner, who's just a dear friend. Sure. And a bit of both.
It just shows how much the media is controlling this whole process. And unless you're willing to, sacrifice, making millions of dollars or hundreds of whatever they're making.
Yeah.
Unless you're willing to sacrifice that, you're in the loop. You're in with them.
No, I mean you're absolutely right. And by the way, the commentators on the MSNBC, CNN, Fox, those people that you see on the air, their pay scales start around $1 million to $2 million a year.
And, yeah, I'm sure that some of them make a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah. You know, Bill O'Reilly's making 10, 20 times that, I'm sure. And you know, but among others, I mean, and in fact, Sean Hannity, I remember when he re-signed a contract, it was a $200 million contract. Limbaugh was around the same time Limbaugh got his $400 million contract. So that was probably about 8 or 9 years ago. But yeah, you know, if you decide that you're going to be an outsider and you're not going to, you know, claw your way up into the higher reaches of corporate media, but instead stay with as the decision that Louise and I made, that we will continue to own our own program and we will continue to have complete editorial control over it, both our radio program and our television program by contract, and, you know, offer that program to anybody who wants to carry it. But, you know, if somebody doesn't want it, they don't have to take it. And I share your concern, John. There are a number of, you know, quote, progressive pundits in this town who really would rather not have to deal with the Bernie phenomena because it's an outsider phenomena. And if they look like or seem like they're promoting him, then they will be shunned or harmed in their own job prospects, in their own
financially.
Futures. Right, financially, exactly. It's all about the money. Well, it's all about the money and the power, and the money and power are kind of indistinguishable in this town.
Yeah, and greed is not good. It's, you know, it's not
no.
It doesn't help us.
No, you're absolutely right.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, John, thanks a lot for the call. Robert in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Robert, you wanted to talk about the South Carolina shooting?
Yes, sir. Good morning. I'm not going to even mention that young man's name. I don't think it's even worthy of being mentioned. And, yes,
yep.
He is a white terrorist. I would like to clarify one thing, though. He is not a patriot, nor is any other racist faction in this country that would bring any kind of violence towards another people. A patriot in this country is one that defends the Constitution for all people, no matter what race, religion, or what their actual beliefs are. We protect that as patriots.
Oh, the pastor who was murdered, who was also a state senator, there's a real patriot.
And a statesman as well. And
yeah.
I'd like to say that I would like to hear more Americans speak of patriots in a better climate rather than to put a patriot as a terrorist in this country, because patriots truly are not terrorists.
Agreed, Robert.
And it's, for the people.
And it's time for us to start clearly saying the Confederate States of America, that was treason, you know, withdrawing from the Union and then fighting a war against your own country. That's treason. They were traitors. And there's nothing noble or brave about the flag of the Confederacy. And the South, by and large, the slave South, the slaveholding South, was these were concentration camps. They were not plantations. They were concentration camps. And Marsha Coleman Adebayo is absolutely right about that. And the slave patrols, the early version of our police departments, were designed to enforce terror. The stars and bars flying over, you know, at full mast in South Carolina is the terrorist flag of a terrorist state. And we need to acknowledge that. Robert, thank you for the call. 15 minutes before past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I wonder if they've ever lowered that Confederate flag to half staff. I don't know. They say it's chained and locked into place or something. But, you know, somebody's got a key to the lock, right? Welcome back. Let's see here. Jesse in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, what's on your mind today?
Hey, hi, Tom. Hey, I think I'm looking at the ideology behind the terrorism. We've been kind of dumbed down to just look at the label of terrorism.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at this ideology, you know, at grassroots. We know where the history of racism come from the slaveholders trying to, you know, persuade the people that, you know, black men wasn't equal and all of that, so they should be kept as slaves.
Right.
I would update it to today. We, over 200 years, I mean, 150 years later, I would look at the way the ideology worked with this young guy and all the other wannabes. It's like, we got a new Confederacy. They represent, you know, the 1%. And they're trying to use the black and white divide issue. But basically, the ideology behind the old ideology is they would like to separate the workers from people who believe in democracy versus separating people who believe in slavery versus the people who believe in all men are created equal.
Right.
So I look at this guy as like a one-man death squad, like they used to have in South America. And the only way I could see out of it is what Abraham Lincoln did to win the Civil War, or help win the Civil War, is printing greenbacks. We're going to have to do the same thing to break away from capitalism, to make democracy work. So that's pretty much it. I know I'm connecting some stretched dots there.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Well, I don't. I know you're
1%, and they're trying to make a world where they could just, you know, do whatever they want to make a profit. They guard versus people believe in democracy. So that's basically it.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. Yeah, and they're largely already there. I mean, this is, you're right. Then this is the divide and conquer politics, and Reagan was the master of this. A tragic thing, but Reagan was absolutely the master of it. Robert in South Gray, South Carolina. Hey, Robert.
Yes, it's Gray Court, South Carolina. Okay, but that's beside the point. What my concern is that it seems to me like gun ownership trumps voting rights.
Really? You think it's more important for Americans to be able to own a gun than to be able to vote?
Do I think it's more important?
Well, apparently Texas does. I mean, you can vote with a concealed carry permit as your ID, but you can't vote with student ID.
Right. That's what I'm saying, that they consider it more important to own a gun than it is to vote. As a matter of fact, I had a discussion with an individual the other day by way of the Internet that she was adamant that we didn't have the right to vote. It wasn't a constitutional
right. Well, actually, that's actually technically correct, and this is what the Supreme Court said in Bush v. Gore when they overturned when they stopped the vote count in Florida, which would have gone in Al Gore's favor, by the way, was that there is no right to vote in the Constitution. The reason that there's no right to vote in the Constitution is because at the time the Constitution was written, both people of color and women were explicitly excluded from having a right to vote. And
I argue that the amendments do give me the right to vote.
I don't think so. And we need an affirmative right to vote written into our Constitution. Robert, thank you for the call. We'll be right back. Sonali Kolhatkar is with us, host of Uprising on KPFK Pacifica's Morning Drive program, and Uprising with Sonali on Free Speech TV. UprisingRadio.org is the website. And Sonali, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you with us. You are actually, there's an announcement here. The Henry A. Wallace National Security Forum, which you are going to moderate, is a project of Robert Greenwald's Brave New Films, and the NSA surveillance shorts will be airing on Free Speech TV this Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow and the day after, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Check your local listings for details. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is an amazing set of interviews that I was so honored to be able to do in collaboration with Brave New Films. And it features interviews with Anand Gopal, an amazing journalist who's done great work in Afghanistan, about how our foreign policy looks like from the perspective of people that we're conquering. Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz and her work on in the history of the United States through its impact on indigenous people. I spoke with William Bloom about the CIA, James Banford about the NSA and the rise rise of the national security state. We had a conversation with Stephen Kinzer about the history of U.S. regime changes. Heidi Boghossian, who has been with the National Lawyers Guild about the national security state and spying. Noam Chomsky, perhaps the most high-profile interview that we did. And, of course, Glenn Greenwald, who was who's become a household name in terms of the revelations that Edward Snowden did. Also Andrew Bacevich and John Turman and Linda Bilmes. So 10 interviews, these interviews that explore in depth the broad strokes of what we mean when we say national security and what foreign policy, what the foreign policy of the United States is versus the impact that it actually has. How all of that fits in with the spying and the surveillance state here in the United States. And I'm very excited about the series of interviews that has been, you know, of course, beautifully edited in the style of Brave New Films. Anybody who's seen their documentaries knows that they do very polished work. And I hope that it'll be a very important tool in the hands of people who question every time we drop another drone strike, every time a lawmaker justifies the spying in the name of national security. And so hopefully people will tune in.
Yeah. How is our foreign policy different from our stated foreign policy goals, different from our actual foreign policy outcomes?
I think one of the most basic things is when we hear President Obama, when we hear those justifying, for example, the drone program that takes out so-called high-value targets. The idea, the theory is that if we were to just drop bombs and extrajudicially kill the leaders of Al-Qaeda and these days the leaders of ISIS, that that's going to disappear our problem of terrorism. On the ground, what it does is simply anger more people. There's always new recruits willing to come and take the place of those we've killed. And in the place of those we've killed emerge stronger leaders. And so we've had the opposite impact of the stated goal of reducing terrorism. We've actually increased terrorism. That's just one example.
Right. And I mean, we should have seen this in our own history. In a way, we're doing what the British did to us in 1776. I mean, it's just the idea. Well, in any case, talk about how our uncritical media coverage feeds all this.
Of course. And see, whenever we have media coverage of, again, just staying on the drone strikes for a bit, we need that historical background that we don't get. The U.S. just dropped a bomb in Yemen last month, and it was confirmed this week that it killed the number one person in Yemen of Al-Qaeda. And already, you know, there's someone else ready to take their place. And what media coverage of that one instance didn't do was it didn't show or link the dots between how the weakening of Al-Qaeda by the U.S. has actually led to the rise of ISIS, right? ISIS, who sees Al-Qaeda as not being able to stand up to the U.S., who's angered by the U.S.'s drone strikes, and who thinks they can do a better job than Al-Qaeda. So the media doesn't connect those dots. And if Americans were to be able to see that fuller picture, we would much more strongly question, as a society, this very mistaken foreign policy.
So is there a call to action for this?
Well, of course, the call to action is always, in addition to understanding better with how these things work, understanding that historical context, we have to question our elected representatives. We have to demand. I mean, we just had half a debate on the USA Patriot Act, which was parts of which was replaced by the USA Freedom Act. But our lawmakers did not ask the basic question of why should we be spying on Americans in the first place, wholesale spying, not talking about police work. Right. And they felt that they did their due diligence, passed the USA Freedom Act, and moved on instead of undoing the entire USA Patriot Act. Those are the kinds of things we need to question constantly and need to overturn. I mean, we're in a very dangerous era today. Our foreign policy, hand in hand with the surveillance state, are creating an atmosphere where people are scared to speak out, or that's the idea. Of course, if the defenders of spying say, well, if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't worry. But that's not the point. The point is that people end up censoring themselves, worried about being caught in the NSA dragnet, and that weakens our democracy.
Yeah, absolutely. And defies at least the principles upon which our country was founded, the Fourth Amendment, clearly, and all that.
It feels like we're living in Orwell's 1984 again, and that's just terrible. It's frightening, and we have to overturn it. And that's what I hope this series of interviews will inspire people to begin looking at as we link the dots, connect them, and then hopefully take action. So I hope everybody tunes in Saturday and Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, to enjoy this wonderful series of interviews that Brave New Films has put together.
Right. This is the Henry A. Wallace National Security Forum, moderated by Sonali, is a project of Robert Greenwald's Brave New Films. The NSA surveillance shorts will be airing on Free Speech TV Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And Sonali, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom. I really enjoy your program.
Thank you. Thank you. Back at you. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And Sonali is doing a great show with her uprising on both Pacifica and on Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. This is absolutely insane. I mean, not only is obviously there's this huge terrorist, racist aspect to what happened day before yesterday in South Carolina. But there is also the gun control piece of this, that we are awash in guns. The United States, when compared with other developed countries, does not have twice as many gun killings. We don't have five times as many gun killings as the rest of the developed world. We don't have 10 times as many gun killings. We have 25 times as many gun killings as any other developed world country in the world. And you've got now, well, this is just a remarkable post over here from T. Bogg over at Raw Story. It's titled Knee Deep in Blood. We're all being held hostage by Wayne LaPierre's children. Right, here we are talking about this again. Let us state it for the record. There's a critical mass of Americans in this country whose very existence is based on ignorance, paranoia, racism, seething hatred, bitterness, and bigotry. And occasionally this animating animus bubbles up to the surface, and racist all-cap rants on Facebook won't make the pain go away. And there's the NRA standing with, as they say at the hardware stores, the right tool for the right job. Because Wayne LaPierre's terrorist-enabling organization does their damnedest to make sure weapons are unregulated, cheap, and plentiful. Practically any U.S. citizen can settle any trifling argument with as little as 3 pounds of pressure on a trigger. And then they go through these bullet points. The mother of Adam Lanza, who had severe emotional problems, kept her home stocked with multiple weapons and thought it would be a good idea to bring her son out of his shell by teaching him how to shoot. How did that work out? 26 people dead at Sandy Hook. 20 of whom were children 7 years old or younger. Also his mother. Elliot Rogers of Santa Barbara couldn't get laid and hated women. His solution, he killed 6 people and wounded 14 others. His weapons of choice, 3 handguns, all purchased legally under the benevolent gaze of Wayne LaPierre. Craig Stephen Hicks had a parking dispute with some Muslim students near a campus at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. He executed all 3 of them with a shot to the head. He liked to carry his .38 on his hip because he was an open carry enthusiast. Another open carry enthusiast, Alex Koska, sexually harassed a woman at the mall where he worked. After losing his job, he returned to the mall with his 9mm and shot 20-year-old Andrea Farrington 3 times in the back. And now Dylan Storm Roof is sat in a predominantly black church in Charleston, South Carolina, before opening fire and killing 9 African-Americans. You know, all of this. The NRA obviously is not solely to blame here, but they certainly believe that they are 100% in the clear. And to make, you know, to really hammer that point home, I recommend you check out the graphic up at the top of Democratic Underground right now. Vile. NRA board member blames murdered Charleston pastor for church massacre. One of the 9 victims of Wednesday's church massacre in Charleston was the pastor of the church, State Senator Clementa Pinckney. Yesterday, one day after the shooting, NRA board member Charles Cotton posted this message about Senator Pinckney on a Texas firearms forum. Quote, he voted against concealed carry. 8 of his church members who might be alive if he had expressly allowed members to carry handguns in church are dead. Innocent people died because of his position on a political issue. End quote. Charles Cotton, member of the board of directors of the National Rifle Association. This is beyond sick. I mean, this is just beyond sick. David in Wellington, Florida. Hey, David, what's on your mind? You wanted to talk about Bernie? Oh, no, you wanted to talk about TPP.
I was calling about TPP, about
right.
asking
Go for
advice on TPP. I love to talk about Bernie, too. If you let me, I'll do that afterwards. But I just wanted to ask, Tom, what you think. I mean, I just want to point out first, I think a great show. I think every issue you've discussed today, TPP, NSA, foreign policy, police brutality, labeling Keystone protesters, terrorists, every one of them reflects the fact that, in my view, the United States has become a plutocracy, and the government is a parasitical enemy of the people of the United States. They don't give a damn what we think. You know, we're useful any more than Britain or France cared before World War I about sending 10 million of their citizens to die in the trenches.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask about TPP. What you think the best mechanism? I mean, I looked up of the 13 senators, the 13 Democrats that facilitated that monstrosity to begin with. A number of them, Michael Bennett is the most vulnerable in Colorado, Patty Murray also in Washington, though, Wyden less so, but all of them are up for re-election in 2016. Cantwell, Heitkamp, Kane, McCaskill, and Bill Nelson from Florida maybe even more saliently are up in 2018 because there's time to do something. How do we what kind of mechanism do we have as people beyond calling? I mean, calling, okay, as I said, I don't think they care. To make them understand that voting for the TPP on Tuesday will cost them their career in the Senate. What do we do about that?
What you do is you show up at your local Democratic Party, you contact them, you figure out how to participate, and, you know, with the explicit goal of helping the local party find a progressive candidate to challenge them in the primary.
That's a little longer term. Do you think there's any way to make it clear to them that this is an issue that people are aware of and care about, and that they will be primaried, or even if not primaried, that nobody, no Democratic liberal base voter is going to vote for them if they vote for this TPP? How do we get that message to them by the vote on Tuesday?
Well, I called, back when it was in the House, I called Earl Blumenauer's office and said, you know, if he votes for this thing, I will support a primary opponent against him, and I will do it both on the air and I may do it financially, although I typically don't support candidates financially just because I do this radio show. I don't think there's anything wrong with calling their office and just explicitly saying that. You know, I will do everything I can to make sure that you are primaried. That's the one thing that these people fear. They, you know, they generally, you know, in most states, and, you know, I mean, the gerrymandering and everything else has reached the point now where most seats are safe within a party. But within the party, at the primary level, and this is where the base turns out, right? Is for the primaries, and if these candidates are blowing away their base, which they are, in my opinion, they are going to be very vulnerable to a primary challenge. So you call them and say, you know, I will support a primary challenger. If they are in your state, you're in Florida, so who's
Bill Nelson?
Yeah. Okay. So
and I absolutely will do that. But it's interesting that many of these people are vulnerable. In fact, so I would hope that they would be more susceptible.
And you may want to call the Democratic Party in Florida and just bluntly ask the question. You say, hey, you know, Nelson is pushing this free trade stuff that is just so wrong. And if he votes this way, I want to support a primary challenger. Does anybody in the party do you have any good prospects? You know, who can I help out? Who can I, you know, they probably won't tell you because, but at least you're registering it on their radar as well.
Sure.
And then, you know, when you show up at the meetings, then you'll hear from the people who are sitting around you who the actual prospective challengers are. You know, they're not going to just tell you in a phone call kind of thing, but
at least maybe they'll recognize the depth of passion on the issue.
Absolutely. 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 David, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. BB in Seattle, Washington. Hey, BB, you wanted to talk about Juneteenth. I was going to talk about that today. There's a great piece in the Washington Post about it, or maybe the New York Times today. Go ahead. Go for it.
Okay. All right. That just brings it that much more for me to call you the Reverend Doctor because you're already bringing these things up. All right. First thing was lawn jockey.
Lawn jockey. That's exactly right. That's what Ronald Reagan had. Yes. Thank you.
Lawn jockey. Okay, second thing, and I think it speaks to this Rachel Dolezal, all this crazy stuff. A friend of mine who's a professor at the University of Colorado brought this up to me about a week ago, It's an audio documentary. You can look it up online. It's called Pike County, Ohio, mm-hmm. As Black as We Wish to Be. And when you look it up online, it's an audio documentary. You punch it in, you can hear it. It talks all about these folks in Ohio that when you look at them, they are white, but they identify as Black. And this goes all the way back to after the Civil, even before the Civil War, I guess, or right before they settled all this area in Ohio. But it's really interesting to see these people, to see the pictures, but to hear their story and talk about how they deal with being Black or not being Black, so on and so forth. But it's really interesting. So I think it's something that people should look at, and maybe you guys want to look at it.
Yeah, I just had a note.
I took today off work because it's Juneteenth. So you're going to bring that up later. I'll let you bring that up.
Well, no, go for it. We got about a minute and a half if you want to just lay it out, baby. Today is June 19th.
So Juneteenth, basically it could be anything from June 13th to June 19th, but that's essentially when the slaves were freed. However, folks in Texas were not freed, and it took about that long until June of 1865 for the word to get out that, hey, by the way, we're free now.
Yeah, they didn't even know about the Emancipation Proclamation until then.
Had no idea. I wonder why.
Because they were in a terrorist state.
Right, exactly. And it's interesting to me, again, I think this has come up before on your show about terrorism and who exactly terrorists are. And I'm sorry, folks, but George Washington would have been considered a terrorist.
Yes, he ran a concentration camp called Mount Vernon.
And, okay, the other thing you talk about a lot is herd mentality, and I think the Democrats really need to get our herd mentality together. And I think that speaks to a lot of us about being animals. So thanks a lot, Professor.
Okay, thanks, BB. Great to hear from you. I think the Democratic Party, while there's some interesting statistics, just a decade ago, only about a third of Democrats said they were liberal. Now it's about almost half.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So we're seeing some progress here. Not so much on racism. Millennials are only 4 points less racist than boomers. We're 35 to 31. Welcome back. Let's see here. Diana in Buckfield, Maine, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Diana, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I saw on, I think it was Amy Goodman this morning, a Black person talking about how this was not a crime against Blacks, but a crime against Christians.
Well, that was a pitch. That was the sales pitch on Fox News yesterday.
Yes, it was. And it was kind of upsetting to me because it was a church that they chose. Had nothing really to do. It was a Christian church, but it also had a lot to do with the civil rights movement and the anti-slavery movement.
Oh, and a slave, one of the more high profile slave revolts in the United States.
Right, and to me that a Black man would say this about this crime was rather surprising. But when it comes out on Fox News, I know people that take everything they hear on Fox News as gospel.
Yeah, which is tragic.
No, it should be something. Yeah, it is. It is, and it's for the TPP.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what we're going to do. How are we going to stop that? Because they obviously aren't listening to the people.
Well, they may well get it through. And, I'll be furious, but I'm not going to despair. Anything that has been done can be undone. The proof of that is the Ronald Reagan presidency. He undid much of FDR's legacy. He undid much of America's greatness. We can undo what Reagan has done. And we can undo and this whole free trade thing is a piece of that. And even though it really arguably started with Nixon, and what it tells us is that we have to get politically active. We have to, and enough with the corporate Dems already, and let's move forward. So we'll see. The vote on Tuesday, it's going to be very interesting. We will see how this goes. Diana, thank you very much for the call. Morris, listening on KPFK in Long Beach, California. Hey, Morris, what's on your mind?
Hey, good afternoon, Professor. I was listening to you this past week, and I want to say thank you. I'm going to slow down my criticism of Hillary. She just might be my voice later on.
Yeah.
Regarding Rachel Dolezal, I want to give a shout-out to her. Say, you go, girl. I'm looking at her body of work. I do not have a lemonade response. Check out her body of work before you comment on this lady identifying with black people. Maybe she's not proud of the history of her people, but I just want to say that I identify with the Clippers. I write songs for the Clippers. People write songs, you know, like the Cowboys, God help them. You can't tell us who to identify with and not to. It's whatever we want here. And I was listening to my boy Sean, was it Glenn Beck or Sean Henry, one of those two. Yes, I do listen to the Patriots. And one of the times they were talking about the situation in Baltimore. And what they said was the arrest of the officers are not going to solve the problem down there in Baltimore. One of the things that I'm noticing, Professor, is that corporate narrative. They're always giving you a corporate narrative here where we really miss the facts oftentimes. Right. So thank God for programs like yours and KPFK where we have at least one source we can go to and get, you know, get a little bit of straight information. And y'all stay blessed, and hopefully I'll run into the senator next week.
Okay. Thank you, Morris. Thank you very much for your kind words, and I'm with you. And what we need to be doing is helping wake people up. This is, you know, Bernie Sanders, I think one of the most important things he's ever said is no president, no matter how great they are, can do the things that need to be done without a movement. FDR couldn't have done what he did without a movement. LBJ couldn't have done what he did without a movement. Ronald Reagan, frankly, couldn't have done the damage that he did without a movement. He built a movement. The conservative, you know, out of the ashes of Barry Goldwater, the conservatives with a lot of money and a lot of effort built a movement. That movement is crumbling now as Americans are seeing it for the shill that it is. And now it's time for us to build a progressive movement. 10 minutes before the hour, let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, and find out what's going on in the news of the day. Brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. Victoria Jones is with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's up in the world?
NAACP President Cornell Brooks said today that the Confederate flag must come down from the South Carolina state grounds following the slayings of 9 African Americans in a South Carolina church. We cannot have the Confederate flag waving in the state capitol, Brooks said. He also called the massacre in the church racial terrorism.
It absolutely is, and that flag is the flag of a terrorist state that had committed treason against the United States, and lost as a consequence of it, and even these plantations, they were actually concentration camps. We need to start calling this stuff what it is. Back to you.
And a board member for the National Rifle Association, Charles Cotton, wrote online that Senator Clementa Pinckney, who is the pastor who was killed on Wednesday night, is to blame for the deaths of his congregation. He said that if he had voted in his legislature to allow gun owners to carry their own weapons into church, quote, 8 of his church members might be alive.
Right.
Now, Cotton, who, according to his bio page, has been a board member for 13 years, he also moderates TexasCHLForum.com, which is described as the focal point for Texas firearms information and discussions. And Cotton says that he voted against concealed carry. 8 of his church members who might be alive if he had expressly allowed members to carry handguns in church are dead. Innocent people died because of his position on a political issue.
This is so sick and twisted. In the United States, gun murders are 25 times higher than in any other industrialized country. 25 times higher. And
the NRA has separated itself from his position. A spokesman saying individual board members do not speak for the NRA and do not have the authority to speak for the NRA.
Well, that's a start.
Dylan Roof appears in court. Well, he probably will appear by video, actually, for a bond hearing.
When we name him, shouldn't we include his middle name? I'm wondering.
Storm. Dylan,
yeah,
Storm.
I was reading stormfront.org yesterday. There's several very, very long threads on there where they're speculating about, you know, was this a false flag operation? Did the Jews put this together? You know, blah, 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 blah. Or in support of him. And I'm wondering where he got that middle name from.
I don't know.
Anyway, back to you.
Interesting. Very interesting. Anyway, he has his bond hearing within the next 30 minutes or so. He's charged with 9 counts of murder.
Yeah. Okay.
In other news, very interesting. The Congressional Budget Office said today that repealing the Affordable Care Act would cost the U.S. government $137 billion over the next decade. Now, this is a new report. It's the first federal assessment since the main provisions of the law took effect in 2014. Now, it works it out. It takes into effect increasing the deficits and then a slightly larger workforce. It also concludes that repealing the health care law would increase the number of uninsured Americans by 19 million in 2016.
Wow. Wow.
Which is quite considerable, actually.
Yeah, and
it's also the first major policy analysis completed since economist Keith Hall was tapped to run the agency by Republicans earlier this year.
Amazing. This is the kind of damage it could do to the Republican Party, actually. Yeah.
The top Democrat on the House panel investigating the 2012 attacks in Benghazi, Representative Elijah Cummings, is stepping up his calls for Republicans to release the deposition of Hillary Clinton friend Sidney Blumenthal, which happened earlier this week, because he's saying that there have been leaks and that it's basically not fair and that it gives a skewed view of things. He also says that the questioning basically did not focus on Benghazi. And so panel Democrats have released a rough ratio comparing the number of questions that related to the events leading up to and after Benghazi, and also Blumenthal's relationship with Clinton. They estimate Republicans asked 270 questions about Blumenthal's business activities in Libya, 160 about his communications with Clinton, 50 about the Clinton Foundation, and 45 on his work for David Brock and Media Matters. They say that the records show that Republicans asked less than 30 questions about the mission in Libya and the Benghazi siege.
Well, that's because the whole Benghazi exclamation mark thing is not about Benghazi. It's about trying to take down Hillary Clinton.
That's what they contend.
Yes. Well, it's true in my opinion. What else is up?
Also, the Obama administration today will propose a mandate to improve fuel efficiency for heavy trucks and buses as part of its efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and fuel use.
Go ahead.
Sorry?
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like a good thing.
That's what they think. They think it will contribute to the U.S. ongoing reduced oil use and benefit the energy, the environment, and the economy. They say that heavy-duty trucks are the fastest-growing component of the transportation sector. It would apply to vehicles like 18-wheelers and intercity buses. They want to require an average efficiency improvement across the industry of about a third, which would reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 1 billion tons throughout the life of the vehicles covered.
Hmm. And will diminish the profits of ExxonMobil and Koch Industries. So I'm guessing that we're going to hear a lot of screaming from Republicans.
That's a possibility.
Yes.
The Office of Personnel Management's independent watchdog is raising doubts about the agency's much-touted plan to bolster its security in the wake of this enormous data breach.
Hmm.
In a flash audit, they say that the proposed update is poorly budgeted, poorly managed, relied on a no-bid contract, and is likely to fail.
Remarkable. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I mentioned in the last hour a study that is published in Science Magazine. It's on page 1358 of the 19 June 2015 issue number 6241. You can find it at sciencemag.org, although I think you have to be a AAAS member to read the whole thing. So I will share pieces of it with you. The title of it, you've heard me talk before about the red deer. I wrote about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? And I'm pretty sure I wrote about it in my book, Threshold. It's probably in a couple of my books. Anyhow, these studies that were done in the UK finding that deer make decision by group consensus, and it has nothing to do with the leader. The leader basically has first pick of sex partner, but that's it. First pick of mate. But in every other regard, the leader is just another member of the herd. And in other words, democracy is in the DNA of mammals. The same is true of birds. The same, you know, when they flock, every wing movement is essentially a vote. And when more than half of all the birds in a flock are voting to move to the left, the whole thing moves to the left. It looks like it's psychic. Like, you know, the same thing with schooling fish or swarms of gnats. It looks like they're telepathically communicating. What they're actually doing is they're voting over and over and over again, really, really rapidly. So what about primates? You know, we're a primate. What about our kingdom, phylum, order? What class, order, genus, species? So it'd be genus, right? Primate. I don't know. Whatever. Our genus is Homo. So in any case, I got to go back and take high school biology. The headline of this is shared decision-making drives collective movement in wild baboons. Conflicts of interest about where to go and what this is. I'm reading this is by Arianna Strandberg Peshkin, Damien R. Farine, Ian D. Cousin, and Margaret C. Crowfoot. And from the abstract, conflicts of interest about where to go and what to do are a primary challenge of group living. However, it remains unclear how consensus is achieved in stable groups with stratified social relationships. Okay, a stable group is basically a tribe or with chimps it would be called a troop. I'm not sure what it is with baboons. And they have a stratified social relationship. In other words, there is a head baboon and there are people at the bottom of the pecking order. There's an absolute pecking order there. So back to the abstract. Tracking wild baboons with a high-resolution global positioning system and analyzing their movements relative to one another reveals that a process of shared decision-making governs baboon movement. Rather than preferentially following dominant individuals, baboons are more likely to follow when multiple initiators agree, suggesting that democratic collective action emerging from simple rules is widespread, even in complex socially stratified societies. This was done at the Mpala Research Center in Kenya. And here's a little quote from page 1360. If social dominance plays a role in determining the outcomes of movement decisions, in other words, if the head baboon gets to decide where they go when they decide to move through the jungle, if social dominance plays a role in determining the outcomes of movement decisions, the disproportionate influence of high-ranking animals should be easiest to observe when single individuals make movement initiations, single initiator events, right? In other words, the head baboon says, okay, guys, we're going this way. It should be fairly easy to track when you've got a GPS thing on every single one of them and you know who they are. We found no evidence of this. The dominant male did not have the highest probability of being followed. Dominance rank did not correlate with initiation success, and no sex differences existed in initiation success despite males being dominant over females. In other words, regardless of gender and regardless of status, baboons make decisions democratically, and when the majority of the baboons decide they want to go in a particular direction, they go in that direction. The researchers go on to say the failure of high-ranking individuals to dominate movement decisions highlights an important distinction between social status and leadership in wild baboons. Our results provide evidence that the decision-making process driving day-to-day movement patterns in baboons is fundamentally shared. In other words, democracy is in our genes. Speaking of people working for democracy, Gabe Meyer on the line with the Washington Move to Amend group, trying to get on the ballot in Washington State. a resolution calling for a constitutional amendment to say no to Citizens United, essentially, that corporations are not people and that money is not speech. WAMEND.org is the website. How's it going, Gabe?
It's going great, and that is a perfect lead-in because we have 3,500 volunteers who are actively acting as citizens as part of a democracy movement. We've recently actually connected with organized labor and got SEIU 775, our biggest caregiver union, and also the Northwest Carpenters, who's doing this neighbor to or labor to neighbor strategy where their rank and file is out working the streets, getting people signed up, getting people on board, and we've already collected 42,000 signatures.
That is fabulous. And your goal is?
Our goal is 330, but we have that by the end of the year. And so I love calling you in and telling you our update and that we're raising money, but we need people's help. We need volunteers, we need money, and we have three big weekends coming up this summer, and I think we're going to double our numbers in those weekends.
That is great. And people can go to WAMEND, as in Washington, move to amend, WAMEND.org. That's the website. Gabe, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today? Charles? Pardon? He's on line 8. But it's interesting, when I hit the next button, he lit up along with the previous caller. Maybe I've got a software problem. Jonathan in Woodinville, Washington. Jonathan, can you hear me? Say what? Maybe we killed the system. Who knows? Okay, let's try Danette in Hinesville, Georgia on line 4. Danette, can you hear me? Uh-oh. I'll bet this is one of those Comcast. It's Comcast, right? Is our internet provider. Don in Evergreen, Colorado, can you hear me? Okay, it looks like Chris in Minneapolis, Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Can you hear me, Chris?
I can hear you, Tom.
Okay, great. And he's on line 9, by the way, so that's okay. What's up, Chris?
Well, hey, I just wanted to talk. You had mentioned conspiracy theories a little bit previously. I think it's interesting how every single shooting, every single mass shooting, people on the right now, and it used to be just what we would call conspiracy theorists, you know, tinfoil hat people. Now it's Republicans that are musing out loud about, well, maybe this was a false flag. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Not so much like the politicians, but the voters, the right-wing supporters of the Republican Party, they basically think that everything is a false flag. And that's so that people don't have to take responsibility for the consequences of these ridiculous gun laws we have. And one last thing, and I'll get off the air. These are the same people who got on Obama for not calling Benghazi a terrorist attack. Now we had a terrorist attack in the church and nobody wants to call it that. I think we should get on them. So that's
yeah.
all.
Yeah. Okay, Chris. Thanks a lot. And thanks for listening to KTNF. You're right. It is a terrorist act. We need to call it terrorism, but we need to go way beyond that. We need to go way beyond just saying this kid was a terrorist and he should be, he was charged with murder. He should also be charged with federal terrorism charges. We need to acknowledge that the Confederate States of America, whose logo is flying over the state capitol or next to the state capitol in South Carolina, the stars and bars, we need to acknowledge that the Confederate States of America was a terrorist state and that the plantations there were concentration camps, that the slave patrollers were the brown shirts and black shirts of that country, and that when the Confederate States decided to separate from the Union, they became traitors and stopped displaying this flag.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This young man who committed this act of terrorism is being arraigned as we speak. We'll be back. Welcome back. Let's see if our phones are working. Corky in Hilton, New York. Hey, Corky, can you hear me?
That story about the primates.
Okay.
I'd like to tell you my story about the fish tank.
Okay.
Democracy.
Okay.
Now, full disclosure, this was in the early 70s, and we were at my friend's house, and we were getting high. And he was complaining he had to go out and buy some more guppies for his fish tank. He had a big fish tank.
Mm-hmm.
Because the big fish and the intermediate fish were eating all the small fish.
Right.
Well, it turns out when all the small fish were gone, then the intermediate fish turned on each other. And the big fish turned on the intermediate fish.
Right.
Until the intermediate fish started disappearing.
Right.
And then the big fish turned on each other. Now, that's, if you can apply that to economics in our present-day state,
right,
the middle class being the small fish, we're being eaten up by the corporate bosses and the others. Now, the corporate bosses are going to start getting eaten up by the big money financiers.
Yeah.
Right? And eventually, there's only going to be the big fish left. That's why they're trying to branch out into these other places, like the Pacific Rim. They're looking for their next feeding ground where they can take advantage of people and their natural resources. This is the fish tank democracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly how it works, and you can see it. If you could go back 50 years and see it fast forward, you could see it all happening in present time.
Yeah.
And there's no way out unless you get together and what you have left is the small fish start to attack these big fish.
Yeah.
And denying them TPP is one of the ways you start attacking them.
Yeah.
Don't give them another feeding ground.
Yeah, we are the guppies.
Yeah, we are the guppies.
That's a great one. And you know, if there were enough guppies, the problem with a fish tank is that it's an artificial environment. In a natural environment, there's a place for the guppies to hide out from the ones that want to eat the guppies, and there's a place for the medium-sized fish to hide out from the big fish. And, you know, there's a natural equilibrium that's established. You throw them all into a...
There's no place for the middle class to hide out.
Right.
Because they have to make a living.
Well, that's the thing. We have moved away from a political and economic ecosystem that provides space for the middle class to be safe. And we have replaced it with an economic and political ecosystem where the middle class is frightened constantly. Everybody's scared.
Wow.
They're one job loss away from disaster. They're one sickness away from disaster.
Tom Hartman.
Say that again, Corky.
My daughter asked me who I was on the phone with. I said, Tom Hartman.
Okay, tell your daughter I said hi. I think your metaphor is is brilliant, and I'm with you.
That's the way it's got to work. We've got to get stick together.
Yeah.
Deny these people their opportunity for new feeding grounds.
There you go. Guppies unite. Corky, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday here. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, how are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me, Tom?
I do.
Good.
It sounds like one of those old Fibber McGee and Molly things where they open the closet and everything falls out.
That's exactly what it was.
What's up?
Well, to me, listening to everything that they were saying, this sounds nothing less than like a political assassination.
You're talking about in the church in South Carolina.
Yes, because if you even look at the people that was involved, the different, things that they brought to the community, and even with the guy who was in the state senate.
Yeah.
You know, if this was a white guy, wouldn't it be called a political assassination? Wouldn't, this be called domestic terrorism all the way? And
yeah.
I think it's, They just look at it as a black man, so it doesn't matter. We'll just call it a hate crime and go with it at that.
If the victims were white and the perpetrator was Muslim, it would be they'd be screaming it was an act of terror. If the victims were white and the perpetrator was black, they would be talking about thugs and gang violence and where are the parents and blah de blah. But because the victim was white and, excuse me, the victims were black and the perpetrator was white, you've got over on Fox News them saying, well, he's mentally ill, or, hey, it's a way, you know, it should happen in a church. This is part of the war against Christianity by the liberals, right? This kid who's wearing the flag of apartheid era South Africa and apartheid era, it's now Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, you know. Yeah, Charles, and I think it was a political assassination. Martin Luther King was a political assassination as well, but it was also an act of terrorism.
Exactly. I just think it's so deep-seated because this senator, he was also at the forefront of getting body cameras on those police officers.
You're right.
And it made me sick to my stomach again to wake up this morning and hear the mayor and these other officials saying, oh, well, this person is sick. No. This person is a racist. This was a racist act, and it's actually, you know, and I don't want him to be executed. I actually want him to live out his life in prison, where he can actually one day turn it around and say, well, you know what? If I didn't have certain influences, then this wouldn't have happened.
Right, because racism is not. Excuse me. Go ahead, Charles. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. That's how we get at the bottom of things. You know, it's more deep seated than just one person. This is not a lone wolf. This is years and years of indoctrination.
Yeah.
And it's going to bother me if we execute someone because, and that's the last thing I'm going to say. I've said it over and over again. We need to protect the people that's least among us. And those that are, you know, if it's a mental, then we still need to protect them from executions as well. Because, you know, as Democrats, as blacks, gay, bisexual, whatever your gender is, or a woman, and you're a minority, we have to protect the people that needs that's actually lower than us, that needs the protection, and that way we can get at the bottom of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, all of this fighting Obama that he wants to stop the guns and everything. Well, it's the guns, and it's the indoctrination of hate that's got these people all riled up. And until we stop executing these people that need mental help, and, you know, until they start, like the guy Tukey, who they killed. He turned his life around.
Yeah.
He actually wanted to do good. He is actually writing children's books. But no, they executed him.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is, instead of us always getting rid of a life, we need to let these people live out their lives and examine them and let them start telling their stories so that we can learn more from them than we learn now.
Yeah, you've touched on a lot of subjects here, Charles, and let me just salute you and agree with you on so many of them. Number one, we've got way too many guns in this country. It makes it much too easy for things like this to happen. It's the reason why we have a 25 times higher level of gun violence in the United States of America than in any other developed country in the world, number one. Number two, racism is not a mental illness. Racism is learned. Racism is taught to people. Somebody taught this to this kid. And that person or those people should be identified and called out as well. And number three, there's this pervasive myth that millennials, which this kid is, he's 21 years old, he's part of the millennial generation, that the millennial generation is not as racist as their parents or their grandparents. Well, we look at the surveys now, and there was a good post over at Democratic Underground on this earlier today. When you ask white people, are black people lazier than white people, which is like, you know, a standard question to elicit a racist response, 35% of boomers, people my age, people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 35% of them will say yes, whites. If you ask the Gen X and Gen Y, the people in their 30s and 40s, It drops down to around 33%. If you ask the millennials, this kid's generation, he's 21, you know, the very young people, it's still 31%. So, you know, things are moving in the right direction, but God, they're moving slow. So, you know, and the reason why is because they're being taught racism by the people older than them. And Louise and I were talking about this morning, and she made a comment about that. And she said, I remember when our son's friends would come over, and I remember actually one time when Louise did this and when I was there, but apparently it happened a number of times when I wasn't, where his white friends would make a racist remark, and one of Justin's best friends was black, and that might have provoked it, and Louise would just jump down their throats. And you've got to unteach this stuff. Thank you, Charles.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Racism is learned. Just like republicanism, it's poison. Welcome back. Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you and Jonathan in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call today. And, sure. And I really first would just extend my sympathy to the, you know, the family, this National Day of Mourning to the families. But, you know, an act of terror like this really, you know, just impacts us all. And it's just a sad day. But there's so many things I wish I could do, so many great calls today. But I wanted to talk about a guy I know at our local grocery store. I knew was taking his day off to go fishing here in the Pacific Northwest. And I asked him how it went. And he was like, wow, the rivers are turned out. They're really low. The fishing's really bad. And of course, we're, you know, part of the route that's extending throughout the entire Western U.S. But my comment to him was kind of sarcastically with, you know, in the light of the, you know, third Bush incarnation and denial of, you know, science and so forth, you know, over 98% of astrophysicists and astronomers would have us believe that, you know, those little points of light they call stars are actually just suns that are far away. And, well, it's kind of ridiculous on the one hand. On the other hand, I just, you know, listen to the, you know, basically everybody in the Republican side of the presidential field using this line of reasoning. And it's really, I think kind of the same right. line. I think the Pope probably has maybe a historical perspective of, you know, they got burned by that guy Galileo a few centuries back.
I think you're right, Jonathan.
Maybe now they're trying to get in front of the ball a little bit on the climate change.
And I'll bet that every single one of these Republicans, and most of them are millionaires, members of Congress, who are denying climate change, every single one of them, if they went to a doctor and the doctor said, hey, it looks to me like you've got prostate cancer, or hey, it looks to me like you've got skin cancer, or whatever, and they said, well, I don't like that diagnosis. They went to a second doctor, said the same thing. Went to a third doctor, said the same thing. Went to 98 doctors. They all said the same thing. The 99th doctor says, nah, it just looks like a wart to me, or, you know, it's just a lump, but don't worry about it. I suspect that all of those Republicans would ignore the one doctor who is the outlier and go with the other 98 doctors and, you know, have the cancer removed. I just, you know, it's
particularly if that one doctor was getting rich off of telling them that they didn't have cancer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So. Especially if his response was, no, you don't have cancer. You have, you've got buffalo disease or something. And by the way, I have the cure for it. It's only $5,000. Here, buy a bottle of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. There you go. Jonathan.
I would just throw in there, you know, you had such a great Representative Grayson earlier gave me a little hope for our Senator Cantwell here possibly turning on the TPA. But I've been writing them. I'd encourage anybody who's in Patty Murray's district. When I've written in and called her phone, I've said, you know, remember Tom Foley, Ms. Murray, because you know, it can happen to you. And in terms of our representative in my district, Ms. Del Bene, you know, she's on the right side of the social issues and you know, works hard for women's rights and LGBT rights. But when it comes to any corporate issue, she's bought and paid for at this point. And
that's tragic.
And, yeah,
that's tragic. And Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell represent the entire state as senators. So there's not a district there. It's just you're a member of the House is representing a district. But you're right. You're right. Jonathan, thank you for the call. Good luck. Joe in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hey, Joe. Charleston shooting?
Hey, yeah. What's that?
You wanted to talk about the Charleston shooting?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think what happens here, and I know you're probably going to accuse me of listening to Fox News, which I don't, except for yesterday, because I heard so many things being said about it that I said, well, let me just take a look. And I think the problem with having is that both the left and the right are falling back into their sound bites and their standard, you know, demonizing the other side. You've been doing it all afternoon. You know, this is Reagan's fault. All Republicans are racist. All the rich people are evil.
No, Joe, I don't use the word all.
I've been listening to you since noon.
Yeah,
today,
it is Reagan's fault.
It is Reagan's fault,
but I don't think that all Republicans are racists, and I don't think that all Republicans are evil.
You said Republicanism is a sickness.
Yes.
Now, how do you think you're going to get together with the other? Why don't we focus on what we agree on? I'm a libertarian, but
but I'm neither. Why don't we focus on what we agree on instead of picking the hot button issues? You know, you want to push gun control.
Because the Republican Party is explicitly in the pocket of big industry, including the big weapons industry. So they're supporting, they are promoting this situation where we have 2,500% more gun violence than any other developed country in the world, number one. And number two, since the Reagan administration and since the Reagan campaign, the Republican Party has been explicitly reaching out for the white racist vote in the South. And it has been quite successful for them. It's why you've got Republican governors and Republican control all across the South, and it's all white. And so, you know,
you dare to listen to a rebuttal, or do you want to?
Well, can you tell me that anything I just said is not true?
Yes, it's not true. And let me tell you what is true. If you want to play that game, the Democrat Party is completely.
There's no such thing as a Democrat Party.
Oh, really?
That phrase is a slur that Joe McCarthy came up with. He said, always, you know, don't call them the Democratic Party, which is the actual name that Thomas Jefferson gave the party.
You
should call it the Democrat Party and be sure to emphasize the rap.
We will call it the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is completely in the hands of big government, race-baiting people who need the poverty and who need racial divide to support their power base.
That is one of the most toxic lies that is promoted by Republicans and corporatists who want to divide America.
Exactly. It's my point, and you are preaching the toxic lies promoted by the extremists on your side. And the problem with America,
you know,
like
Joe,
you
have not told me anything that I have said that is not true.
It's absolutely not true. Well,
you're telling me it's not true that Ronald Reagan said that if somebody wanted to discriminate in housing against a Negro, his phrase at the time, that they should be allowed to do that. That's an actual quote from Ronald Reagan. He opposed the Fair Housing Act.
Are you telling me that the minister? That Harry Byrd wasn't a member of the Ku Klux Klan. Are you telling me the minister in Texas 2 weeks ago said that
Byrd repudiated the Klan? Byrd, you don't believe in redemption?
Can you tell me how it isn't true that the Democratic Party isn't in the hands and actively promotes racial division because they need to keep their power base?
What I would say to you, Joe, is that the Democratic Party. At least in recent history, at least since the 1960s, the Democratic Party has, or since the 1930s, has by and large been the party of the disempowered and of labor. And the Republican Party has been the party of big business and big money. And it's that simple. And so, yes, you've got a lot of, because of institutional racism in the United States, because of everything from segregation all the way back to slavery, you've got an awful lot of African Americans who are in poverty and disenfranchised, and so of course they would gravitate to the Democratic Party. That is not race baiting. That is an absolutely predictable consequence, just like for the same reason that you've got a bunch of white rich people who go to the Republican Party, because the Republican Party represents white rich people.
The Democratic Party is a huge institution, corporatist type party, and Hillary Clinton is the epitome of that type.
Okay, good luck with it, Joe. Good luck with it. Danette in Hinesville, Georgia. Hey, Danette, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you did a respectable job dealing with that guy, your previous caller. For someone, I am an African-American, and I get really tired of hearing that every time something happens in the black community and we bring it up, that it's race baiting.
Right.
If anybody is the biggest race baiter in this country, it's white people who started this country on the basis of race in the first place.
Yep.
So, you know, don't whine and complain when you are being called on your crap. Like, it's just, it's over, it's done. We cannot expect other countries to even listen to us when we are the height of hypocrisy, when, you know, a black girl can be accosted by police and slammed to the ground like she was a couple of weeks ago. And this white man who shot up black people in church is treated with the utmost respect.
Right.
And oh, woe for him. He's got mental illness. He does not have mental illness. He is a radicalized white supremacist.
That's right.
And that's the truth.
And that is not a mental illness. That's something he learned.
And
Excuse me.
Say it again.
I said, and that is not a mental illness. That is something he learned. Pardon me for interrupting you, Jeanette.
Yeah, that's okay. It is something that he learned. His parents taught him that. The people around him taught him that. If they did not shut him down and tell him not to say those things when he would say ugly things, if he was hearing them from friends or whatever, you know, I have children. And when my children say things that are incorrect, I tell them that we don't say those things, and I explain to them why we don't say those things.
Right.
Whether it is a scientific fact that's wrong or it's a generalization of people, you know, you cannot treat people with disrespect and then expect to be treated with respect. And I'm sorry, but it's a double standard in the media where they're calling this man mentally ill. I'm sorry, right. But if you, who was it? I want to say that it was a young person that I spoke with earlier this week, either my niece or my nephew. If you go and you shoot someone, you have to be filled with hate. I mean, hateful people do those kinds of things. Yeah. Loving people don't go around randomly shooting people.
Right. And by the way, when you're talking about this media narrative of white people are mentally ill, but black people are thugs or you know, fill in the blanks or terrorists, we should call this the largely white-owned corporate media, because that's what it is. Jeanette, thank you for the call. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's time for America to face its history head-on, especially the history of the terrorist Confederate States of America. Welcome back. Eric, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Hey, Tom, it's Anything Goes Friday. Holy cow, I've been on hold a while. Thanks for coming in. Sure. I actually just wanted to do a little bit of a call to action for some folks. I've called you about it in the past. It is a lawsuit entitled Landon v. Kroll. I am the Landon, and last we spoke of it, I was skinning my teeth hoping I might fight my way towards picking a jury. We're getting real close. I'm drafting the document right now that is my response to a motion to dismiss, and it is a humdinger.
And this is about drug testing cops. Do I get this right?
Course, probation. I was a person on probation,
right?
Subject to testing for cause, and it was a goofy new bit of technology that offered cheapness and gender ease in that it was an oral swab, so nobody's pants had to come down.
Right.
And that's great. But the laboratory has to perform the analysis that it actually contracted to and was pursuant to law required to do under state public health laws.
Right.
They did not. I had long suspected that, Tom, literally for years. They
right.
burned me on one of these allegations 4.5 years before the one that is now the epicenter of the lawsuit. And I knew I was innocent, so I began independent blood testing in 2004. And in December of 2007, I faced the allegation that actually they handed me the lawsuit on a silver platter. I had done the blood testing for so long, was getting near the end of the sentence, and was thinking, holy cow, I did all this work. I spent all this money on this blood testing, and I'm not going to get to have the confrontation to put test up against test and have it out in the court. And they've been offering me money all along. I mean, I struggled to pay my heat bill this winter, man. And last offer was $600,000.
Whoa.
And, well, you can find me in a Times Herald Record newspaper in New York
yeah.
where I'm quoted as saying, you know, they ask you, well, Mr. Landon, what would you like for this? I said, I'll take $1.50 for a cup of coffee in a public record.
Yeah.
So I need a trial. I need my facts here. And the case is now under my control, where my former attorneys had really messed it up trying to.
Cool. So it's a matter of principle. Eric, I got to move along, but thank you for sharing, you know, for the update. I wish you the very best. Carol in Merle's Inlet, South Carolina. Hey, Carol, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You want to talk about the South Carolina shooting?
Yeah, oh, for sure. First of all, I want to commend Charles, the caller, a couple of calls before. He's a better person than I am. I'm of the thought that this young punk should have been thrown into the general jail population, thrown to the wolves.
Yeah, except that there's a lot of white racists in the general jail population. That's one of the bigger, gangs.
People that could give him a whooping that his parents never did.
Yeah.
Also, I think that kid is probably learning a lot of things from the Internet. You know, I've supported the Southern Poverty Law Center for years, and they've shined a light on all kinds of racist groups that were basically Klans people and skinheads and that have now gone, you know, through the onto the internet and have Facebook pages and their own websites and everything. So this kid is getting indoctrinated, just like, you know, people were talking on the news about ISIS, people joining ISIS because they are being attracted to the excitement of that on the internet. So this is definitely domestic terrorism.
Yeah, I'm with you. Carol, thanks for the call. I think that's a very insightful comment, and tying this to the way that ISIS is recruiting people on the internet, the same way that the white racists are recruiting people on the internet, is brilliant. Thank you, Carol. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to our writer-researchers, Nate Sweet and Troy Miller, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the companies that, and groups that syndicate this program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV, On Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on our TV show, The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to Netroots Radio, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, he was in here today, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Thank you so much. Don in Evergreen, Colorado. Hey, Don, what's up?
Hey, just a couple of things. The the caller a couple of minutes ago, it really got me going. The I'm an international international airline pilot. I travel the world, and I absorb the best of multiple cultures and really enjoy it. So I've learned that it's just totally senseless to discriminate based on race, creed, color, orientation, belief system, or planet of origin. I mean, for Pete's sakes, grow up.
Yes.
You know, ni hao, konnichiwa, guten tag, and aloha.
There you go.
But anyway, what I called about was the I called my senator, Michael Bennett, called his local office about the ask how they were planning to vote on the TPA, fast track. And the aide told me, well, he did vote for it the last time. And I said, yes, and as a result, I sent you a letter asking you to take me off of the email list for contributions because I'm not going to contribute to him anymore. But he said he's considering the new one. He's evaluating the new one, but they're not allowed to say how they will vote, how their senator's going to vote. And I said, well, you just tell him that if he votes for Fast Track, I'm a Democratic precinct committee person, thanks to you, and I will do everything possible to primary him if he sells us out again.
Wow. How'd they react?
So, Okay, thank you very much, and hung up.
Yeah.
But, you know, as
that's the message.
Person, we do have extra power because we're at the very start of the nomination process and the platform building and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Good on you, Don. Good on you. Thank you for calling and sharing that story. I'm sure it's going to inspire others as well. Thank you. Michael in Washington, D.C. Hey, Michael, you want to talk about TPP? Michael? Michael's on line 10. I can't hear him. Diane in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Diane, can you hear me?
Just let me take you off speaker.
Sure. Thank you.
I just wanted to comment on a previous caller who called the Democratic Party a racist party.
Right.
The Republican Party is the Dixiecrat Party. It is basically controlled by Democrats who oppose the Civil Rights Act of 1963, all civil rights legislation, and joined the moribund Republican Party in the South and the Southwest.
Right.
That is the your core of your Republican Party.
Yeah, and Reagan
and
reached out to those people.
Platforms down through the years since that time period, you'll see that their basic objective is to roll back all civil rights legislation. And they have basically done it, in a sense. They've been successful at doing it.
Well, look at what the Supreme Court just did.
By appealing to the poor white Southerner and saying, blaming black people for whatever their problems are. And if it wasn't for these black people, you wouldn't be in this situation. And they felt fallen for it.
Yep. And the fact of the matter is that those poor white people wouldn't be in that situation. They would have good factory jobs if it wasn't for the crazy trade policies of largely the Republican Party, We've had a couple of Democratic presidents sign off on them, but they were promoted almost exclusively by Republicans. And the insane, you know, Reaganomics, tax policies and whatnot that have migrated all the money up to the top. And so then they're saying to the poor people who they screwed, who they put in that position, oh, it's those black people. Or, oh, it's those people from Mexico who want to come and take your job. It's those Hispanics. And it's the worst kind of divide and conquer strategy. Diane, very well said. Thank you very much for the call. Michael in Washington, D.C. Hey, Michael, TPP? Michael? Can't hear him. Jeff in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, Mike. Let me take you off speaker. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm glad that guy called a few calls ago about calling us a Democrat Party and things. And what I wanted to talk about was talking to my brother-in-law. Actually, this one is my brother, that's a Republican who just does not listen much to, you know, they have their talking points. And what I was asking you, and by the way, thank you for what you do. It's just great. I get so much information from you.
Thank you.
Is to the talking point of the day of the Republicans or the week or whatever it may be to help us find out what it is and verify their facts or what they're saying or not verify them so we can talk to our circle of Republican acquaintances and say, no, that's not true, and here's why it's not true.
Right.
And just give us more ammunition to talk to them, which helps with Bernie's groundswell.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and I think, you know, taking a lesson from Bernie, I mean, Bernie won't attack fellow Democrats. Bernie, for that matter, won't even attack Republicans by name. I mean, he's basically running a positive campaign. I think we need to look for those areas of commonality, even though that's what Joe said the other, you know, when he was criticizing me, he was like, why don't we find the areas of commonality? Yeah, he's right. We need to find those areas of commonality. We need to treat each other like human beings. But we also don't, you know, shouldn't back down from what's true.
Right. And when usually when you get to talking points, like the guy that talked to you, when you pinned him down on a point, he just said, well, what about this? Well,
right.
You know, that he just changed the subject. With a family member or extended family member or friend, you can say, no, let's stick to the point, make your point. What is it that you're, why do you believe that?
Right. Let's work through this particular issue. Well said, Jeff. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. And thank you all for being with us all this week. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Remember, this vote is coming up on Tuesday, a great time to call your senators this time. 202-225-3121 is the number for the switchboard on Capitol Hill. 202-225-3121. The Senate, you know, they're still answering the phones right now. And let them know your opinion on Fast Track, which is going to be voted on Tuesday in the Senate. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.